Hello, Gordon.
Good afternoon, Ian. What a joy it is to be on your show.
Oh, thanks. A pleasure having you here. Thank you very much for being here. So, how much are guitar lessons?
Oh, you're free, sir. I don't...
Oh, that's good. Can you teach a lefty?
Yeah, I could, actually.
Oh, good.
The interesting thing about teaching somebody who's left-handed is when you're facing them, it's a mirror image.
Exactly. So. Exactly. See, I got taught, when I was 8 years old, by Martin Murray from the Honeycombs.
Oh, okay.
And he refused to teach me left-handed. He wanted to teach me right-handed. And I didn't feel comfortable, and I never practiced. And my mum stopped the lessons because I wouldn't practice. And then when I picked the guitar up again, it was naturally left-handed again. And yeah. Everything just went out the window. And I've never played a guitar since. And I'm so sad.
What a shame. That's a shame.
I love the instrument. It's a beautiful... And I'm jealous, you know. I sit and watch all my friends that can play guitar, and it just oozes out of them. Like it does with you. The music just oozes out of your fingers onto that fretboard and onto the guitar and play on the strings. And that such beautiful music comes out.
Well, I do my best.
Well, look, you're revered by some of the best guitarists out there. Jimmy Page, Richie Blackmore. Wow. Guitar heroes.
Yeah, it's a lovely thing. It never ceases to amaze me. And I have to pinch myself at times when I hear, when I read about what lovely things people say about me and what they've said to me to my face.
Yeah.
I can add two more names to that list, actually. One is Dave Murray from Iron Maiden.
Wow.
And the other one is my dear friend Pete Townsend.
It sounds like you were the man that invented the guitar rock god.
Not really. Not at all. Now, the people that... I mean, Pete Townsend is one of my big influences and one of my... I don't like to use the word hero. He's a huge influence on my life and on my playing.
Wow. So yeah. Who was playing first, you or him?
Oh, Pete, well before me.
Is he?
Only about, it's about 3 years in our, 3 years difference in our age, I think. But when you're younger, of course, 3 years is massive, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You know? But no, Pete is a towering genius, one of the great towering geniuses. Not only of the guitar, but of modern popular music, rock music, without a doubt.
And recording as well. I mean, he built his own studio, didn't he?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, the man's a genius. There's a book by Glyn Johns, the record producer, and he devotes a whole chapter to Pete Townsend.
Wow.
And he said people must never overlook the fact that Pete Townsend is on the same level as the Beatles.
Oh, without a doubt.
In terms of influence and invention, everything.
The Who influenced... I've been in a couple of bands as a singer, and The Who has heavily influenced the guitarists in those bands, including, I think, the band that I'm in now, because we've gone back to the raw rhythm and blues kind of thing,
yeah.
Which is how they started, really. I mean, they were a rhythm and blues band, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, R&B in Tamla Motown.
Yeah.
Big on Tamla Motown, yeah.
And that's something that I love. And I've just noticed in your biog that you've also been in a band with Don Partridge.
Yes, I did. I formed a band with Don in 1968 called Accolade.
Yeah.
And basically we were trying to, if you like, fall hard on the heels of the Pentangle,
right?
You know, with Danny Thompson on bass and the two great guitar legends, Bert Jansen and John Renbourn, and it was that kind of music, acoustic, very acoustic blues folk, and of course we had a flautist, so it was kind of almost getting into moody blues territory as well.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah. Ian Anderson as well, surely. That kind
of... Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, Ian Anderson popularised the flute big time, didn't he, within rock music with
Cole. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So Don didn't try and make you put a bass drum on your back and cymbals on your knees then?
No, I've never busked in my entire life. Don Partridge was, he really was the king of the buskers.
I know, yeah.
He was the greatest. Yeah, set that aside, Don was an incredibly gifted man, God rest his soul. He was a great singer, a great songwriter, a fine guitar player. And but he was a free spirit. He was very much like a gypsy. He liked the idea of street singing. So and he went back to that.
I've got to be honest with you. I preferred Blue Eyes to Rosie. It was just a much nicer song for me.
Yes, I agree with you. Of course, he didn't write either, did he?
No. No, no, but I still preferred that one to Rosie. I don't know why. Do you know, just the way the song went and the flow of the song, it's just such a nice tune.
It was more joyful and more uplifting than yes. Rosie, I think.
Yes, that's true. That's true. So let's go back. Let's go back to the song I just played, then Heart Song. They used that for the holiday theme tune.
They did, yeah. They picked up, many people at that time picked up on it, which I was obviously very pleased about.
Oh, yeah, of course.
mainly the holiday programme probably gave it the longevity it has.
Yeah.
Because they used it for about between 8 and 10 years, I think. And everybody listens to it of that generation associate that with the holiday programme, which is great. A lot of people go, oh, I don't know what it's called, but I just remember it was a holiday programme theme.
Yeah, some places you'll type in holiday theme and it will come up and play it. Yeah. Some places it'll actually say the name of the song and who performed it.
do you still
practice a lot? Now you're of a certain age and you've been playing guitar for so long, do you still find you need to sit there for 4 hours, 5 hours a day playing, or do you just pick it up and have a little strum here and there?
No, I'm not that natural. There are players like the great Albert Lee, Martin Taylor, Tommy Emmanuel. These people started playing very, very young, between the ages of 7.
Yeah.
Upwards, and when you start that early, I think the hand forms, and you don't need to practice it much. You can pick it up where you left off in terms of muscle memory and the way the hands are constructed. I at the moment, because of COVID, I am not match fit in terms of doing a concert.
Right.
If I had a concert like next week, I would have to sit down and practice 4 hours a day.
Wow.
To get my fingers back in shape again, without a doubt. But what the lockdown has allowed me to do is give me more time to be creative. So I've written a lot of material.
Oh, lovely!
During this period, not dozens and dozens, and it's been at a leisurely pace.
Yeah.
But it's allowed me that time to be able to focus on that, as opposed to thinking, oh, I can't finish this piece of music because I've got to practice for a gig, or I've got to get in the room, or I'm going to be away 3 days on the road or whatever.
Yeah, I know.
So for me, a lot of good's come out of it. I shall look back on this period with a degree of fondness, but I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky because I've got a nice garden I can walk round, and I've got a nice house with a music room, and it's lovely. It's a luxury, so I never lose sight of that fact.
Well, that's good. So what made you did this collaboration come about with Carrie?
Well, it started really the second we met, and I'm going back what, 6-7 years ago. We feel as though we've known Carrie all our life, really, because she's like family to us. But she was in the dressing room of the gig that we were doing together, and I just heard this beautiful voice and this very nice guitar playing.
Yeah.
And I walked in and there was Carrie.
Wow.
Just warming up. And she was doing time after time. I thought, and she stopped. I said, don't stop. Keep playing. It sounds great. She did. She was trembling a bit, I think, because she was a bit in awe.
It really happens, you know. It does happen.
I said, for God's sake, I gave her a good slap. I said, get out. Stop that. Tell him.
Let people know you're only joking, and we don't condone the slapping of ladies.
No, I was going to say no. and I said, yeah, sure. I said, do you fancy, would you like me to play on this tonight? She said, oh, yeah, that'd be great. that's how it started. So it's become very, very strongly associated with us. It's become a kind of a very emotional bond between us. And of course, it's a stunning song. And I like to think that we've brought something new to it. I mean, Carrie's interpretation of it, I think, is just sublime.
Yes, it's lovely. Yeah. We're going to hear that when we finish Devin and Natter.
Everything she does, everything she writes, it's quite breathtaking. She's a very talented woman, very talented.
So you're both playing guitar on this one?
Yes, we are. Yeah. She's doing the main guitar, and I'm doing the complimentary bit in between. Now she's doing all the work, but it kind of blends together as like one piece.
Yeah.
But you'll just hear me in the background, almost approaching it in an orchestral way. I'm doing some harmonics and some arpeggiated notes in between. And
the technical stuff, as they say.
Yeah, sort of the clever stuff.
I've got a lot of guitarist friends, and they start talking weird chords and diminished chords and sevenths and this, and I look at them and I'm thinking, time I went and made the tea.
Well, I'm the same. I mean, you know, everything I've ever done in my life, and I take a small degree of pride in it, that everything I've ever done has been self-taught. Everything's homemade.
Awesome.
Everything. Guitar playing.
That's the best way.
So, you know,
comes from the heart.
You know, people say, oh, what's that called? I say, I don't know what it's called. I just say, it sounds okay. If it sounds right, it is right to me. You know, there are no rules within music.
No, but you...
The end result is creative, and the end result is play from the heart, and hopefully it would move people, and it has what I call a resonance of truth about it.
Yeah.
Which is honesty, and therefore it will communicate.
Yeah, that's what makes... your kind of music different from a lot of others, because it is, it's played from the soul, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, I can give dozens and dozens of examples of songs, instrumental pieces, orchestral pieces that come from that place, that higher form of consciousness.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with ego. And I believe that's where it comes from. There's no agenda. There's no agenda of, will this make me any money? Will people like it?
Yeah, I know. You're there for the music, not for the money.
Yeah, exactly. You just take the ego out of the equation. Anything of worth that's been created, has got to come from that place. Otherwise, it's phony.
Of course. Oh, without a doubt. So when you go to write something, does the tune form in your head and then you rush and find the guitar and start writing it down, or do you actually sit there with the guitar and hope something comes into the head and out through the fingers?
Yeah, it's the latter.
Yeah.
It's the latter, really. I just sit with the guitar, and if an idea comes, then I follow it. And, you know, this isn't false modesty, but so many people have said, oh, these tunes that you write, they're great and they're fantastic or whatever. Obviously, they said they like them. If they didn't like them, they wouldn't say it.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, I've got to be honest. I said, I don't know where this stuff comes from. I said, I'm not that clever. I'm not that bright. I can promise you. It just comes from somewhere else. And if one's been doing it for a long time, you do create a craft. It becomes craftsman-like in the way it's constructed. So therefore, I'm just a conduit for whatever wants to come through. You know, you download it. You download it from, I mean, I sound like an old hippie talking now, but you download it from the ether, from the universe.
Yes, that's where you bring it out from.
If it's good, you go, well, thank you very much for that.
Oh, and what do you prefer playing, acoustic or electric?
Acoustic.
Yeah.
Although I've recently been strapping on an electric, I've been dabbling with the electric, and it's kind of nice to get back into it again, but I was never an electric guitar player. I was always forced into that role.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. When going back to 1975, I was working with my producers on an album called Visionary.
Yeah.
You may be familiar with it. Inspired by William Blake. And we were going through the demos for the pieces, and they would say, well, this section here, Gordon, is going to be a 6-bar, an 8-bar electric guitar solo. And I said, in all honesty, I said, that's great. I said, who's going to be doing that then? Who have you got in? They said, you are. And I said, I don't play the electric guitar. They said, well, you do now.
Oh, wow.
And they literally thrust a Telecaster in my hand, and away I went. And I then found that I could kind of get away with it.
Yeah.
And to a degree, I'm still getting away with it.
So what do you prefer? Do you prefer a Fender or a Les Paul?
I think I like Strats a little bit more because it's a much more clearer sound, I think.
Yeah.
I think humbucking pickups, which are you know, the go-to for a lot of rock guitar players, are fine. But I like a more transparent sound. And when you listen to the greats like Mark Knopfler, Albert Lee,
And
these days Clapton's been playing a Strat for years.
Of course.
You know why. It's a sound you can build on as opposed to, well, that's the sound, and that's it. That's what you're going to get. But with a Strat, you know, there are more parameters for doing more things. Of course, one of the ultimate Strat players, of course, is the great Jeff Beck.
Well, of course, yes. And Hendrix, they made them sing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Hendrix was playing a Strat, really, when it wasn't that popular.
No, I know.
No. It kind of went out of fashion, you know, with one of my great guitar influences, Hank Marvin. And then people started to realise, well, actually, you can do anything with this guitar.
Well, of course, but Hank also went over to Burns for a while, didn't they? The whole band went over to Burns guitars, but they were a British guitar.
They were fantastic, and actually, in the hands of Hank, the Burns sounded awesome.
Yeah, looked a bit funny, but
guitars.
The Honeycombs, I think, played them as well. I know that because of.
Yeah, funnily enough, Eddie Spence was in my band for many many years, and Eddie did that wonderful solo and heart song, which your listeners would have heard a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
He was actually in the Honeycombs for a time.
Wow.
Obviously a latter incarnation of it, but yeah. He was in the Honeycombs, yeah.
So my final question then, because I want to play your new song, and I'm itching to play it to the audience, is did you ever meet Peter Green?
I did. I put a posting on my website and on Facebook about Peter.
Yeah.
The day after he passed, and I mentioned about what an incredible influence he was on me and on lots of guitar players.
He was,
and
yeah.
And in 1980, I signed with the record company that he was signed to, specifically in the hope I would meet him. I mean, that's not exactly good business, is it? You know, how crazy is that? You sign with the label, you think, I might be able to meet Peter, which I did eventually in 81. I met him in a pub in Putney called The Half Moon.
Yeah.
With his late brother Len, and my then girlfriend was with me, and we went to a local curry house and had a very interesting evening.
Nice.
I then just foolishly, I look back now to my shame, I did a cover version of Oh Well.
Oh.
The reason why it wasn't a good idea was A, I can't sing.
Right.
B, you cannot, and Peter said this to me on the night. He said, you can't cover a classic, man.
Yeah.
That's what he said. It's true. Because I said to him, what do you think of my version of Oh World? And he said, can't cover a classic. He's right. How can you possibly create the greatness?
Oh, no. You can't. You're just trying to emulate it, really, aren't you?
You're trying to emulate it, but you can't recreate the energy and the vibe and the studio.
No.
And the genius that's in that man's hands at that time when he was doing it. And that voice. Oh.
Yeah,
there's a quote that Bob Dylan wrote in his book Chronicles about a great musician called Mike Seeger, who was a younger brother of the great Pete Seeger.
Yeah,
and Dylan had gone to see him, and he said this man, he said he could play everything, not only well but like the best you've ever heard it. He could play great ragtime guitar, country guitar, play the auto harp, the violin, the mouth organ. And he said, I thought really long and hard about it. He thought, the only way I can be as good as Mike Seeger is to be Mike Seeger.
Yeah.
So what he's saying is impossible, you know?
I know.
And Peter Green was a one-off. He's a one-off genius. He was a force of nature. The candle burned very brightly for a short time. And then, of course, he succumbed to substances, you know?
I know, yes.
You know, and he never came back from it.
Which is a shame.
Which is like Sid Barrett, you know.
Yeah. But I think Peter Peter was still a little bit more in the public eye. I mean, it was only about 10 years ago, I think, my friend who had a rehearsal studio on Canvey Island, because he lived on Canvey, I think, and they got together, he got a few musicians together, and they like had a jam and stuff in the studio. It was all sworn to secrecy at the time. But after Peter passed, my friend put the photos up as well. And I would have just loved to have been a fly on the wall, or even been in the room with them as a person, and just to have been there with that man at the time.
Yeah, it would have been great. The last time I saw Peter perform, possibly could have been between 8 and 10 years ago, at the Countess of Huntingdon Hall in Worcester.
Right.
And he was there with the band, and we got there a bit early for the sound check. Because I'd used the venue many times, and my agent's office was based there.
Oh, nice.
So we got there a bit early, and he just finished rehearsing, and he and the band were just about to go upstairs, so they had a little cafe up there at the time for a bit of a lunch.
Yeah.
And he walked past, I said, Peter, and he stopped and looked at me. I said, does the name Gordon Giltrap mean anything to you? I thought he might remember. And he went, oh, yeah, he said, yeah, the name rings a bell. Oh. That was about it, really. And he did the gig on the evening, but it wasn't, you know. And I think it's too much for people to ask for their heroes to be like they were 40 years ago.
Oh, of course.
Not possible.
Of course.
But he did okay. He sang a bit, but he didn't. He wasn't the Peter Green that was. And how could he be?
Yeah.
Not possible.
That's true. Yeah. I totally agree with you. Well, thank you for coming on today and being so candid and open and telling us all about yourself and the new single, which is with the lovely Carrie Martin.
Well, I'll tell you, Ian, you asked some great questions, mate. So all down to you. Thank you.
That's my pleasure. My pleasure. Yeah. And I'm gonna pop straight to the adverts, and then straight after that, we're going to hear Time After Time, which is the wonderful Cyndi Lauper song. Has Cyndi heard it? Do you know? Has she heard this version yet?
Oh, I've no idea. You just never know. There must be a lot of versions of that song.
Oh, yes, but this is a good one, I think.
Well, it'd be nice if someone could get it to her, but who knows?
I'll tell you what, I'll shout out loud enough, and hopefully she'll hear it. And you never know, you can end up hearing back from her.
You just never know, do you?
You never do. But thank you for coming on. It's been lovely to talk to you. And for the time being, Gordon Giltrap, thank you for being on Drive Time here on Phoenix FM.
Pleasure.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Time after time. night, and the drum beats out of time. If you're lost, you can look and you will find me. Time after time, if you fall, I will catch you. I'll be waiting. Time after time, if you fall, I will catch you. Time after time, time after time, time after time, time after time.
Wow, that's the lovely Carrie Martin and Gordon Giltrap and Time After Time. What a beautiful song, beautiful version of that song as well. Coming up after the news, we've got some Ashford and Simpson. We've got a little bit more instrumental music for you as well, with a theme from Deliverance. I've had a request for that one. I've got to play it. I love it. Ding, 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 ding. But first, let's get the news out of the way.
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM News.
From the Sky News Centre at 4, tributes have